Get the knives out. Dish is about to be served. Outrageous. Are you kidding? I've been inside only one woman after I was born. The Statue of Liberty. Provocative. If it's a pain in the ass, honey, you're not doing it right. Pop culture. Meanwhile, she's on the cover of Us Weekly, dating. Boyfriends are like jobs, except he probably stopped sucking after a year. Wicked. What do I look for in a guy? My dick. Smart. Sassy. Contemporary. I mean, I can't. Porn Again, the podcast. Hi, everyone. It's Josh Sabara here with my lovely blue Louboutin nails, which I have ready for DragCon.
Oh, yes. Oh, there I am. Again,
RuPaul's DragCon.
Yay.
So I'm here today with my guest, Jason Carter.
Hi, everybody.
The stunningly handsome.
Thanks, Josh.
Television host and former dancer.
I still dance from time to time.
Okay. From time to time does not make you
right.
a dancer.
Does not make it the dancer.
I jump off a swing from time to time. I'm not in Cirque du Soleil, Jason. Okay? And part of RuPaul's Drag Race pit crew since the show's third season.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You so much for being here.
Hey, Josh. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I was like looking forward to coming and hanging out with you.
Well, who wouldn't?
I mean, right?
Don't even start that list.
Oh.
That will take the whole time. Typically, before we get into talking about you, and we will get there, I usually discuss things that are going on in the media or in the news that are sort of irritating to me that week. And I have a lot this week to discuss, and I'm so interested to get your take on them. So we were talking before about Beyonce.
Beyonce. The beehive. Yeah. You got to be careful. The beehive's everywhere.
So Beyonce put out another surprise album, Lemonade.
Yeah.
Seemingly about her relationship issues with Jay-Z. So first of all, I wanted to know what you think of the album mm-hmm. in terms of music and its art, in terms of art.
Well, you know, I think that if...
While I enjoy my Starbucks.
I think Lemonade, it's artistically and conceptually... It's fantastic. I think it's Beyonce's most revealing and most humanistic work ever because, you know, on December 13th of 2013, she put out the Beyonce album.
Right.
And, you know, like I was at the World of Wonder Christmas party and all of a sudden, like, phones are going off. Beyonce has a new album, blah, blah, blah. But so this time around, I think the whole hype behind Lemonade, first of all, I was like, what's in a name? Like, really, Lemonade? Really? It's like Mariah Carey's name titles from the 90s, Butterfly, Rainbow, mm-hmm. Lemonade, Sriracha, you know, it's really crazy. But I think it's great. I think you have to, as with the last album, you have to really listen to it in its entirety to really see what she's talking about. And if there is trouble in paradise, that is by far the most amazing divorce announcement ever because she put it all out there. She's like, I'm mad. Something has transpired to make her.
That is basically what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Do you think that it really speaks to their marriage or do you think it's basically a piece of marketing?
I think there's truth. There's probably some truth behind. I mean, there has to be. There to, you know, pain sparks creativity. Beyonce, I'm granted she's brilliant. I mean, she's a brilliant businesswoman. I've been a Beyonce fan since summer '98 with Destiny's Child. When I was like, who names mm-hmm. their kid Beyonce? We're like, what, Beyonce? Like, we could even speak, like, what is that name? You know,
I always wanted to pitch a show to like HGTV, like where it's called Bed Bath and Beyonce, where she sits and helps you make macrame plant holders and things like that, where you make things.
But the music's fantastic, but I do think there's probably something has happened to make her write these things because it's very revealing. And the lyrics, if there's a song there called Six Inch, which is the best track on the album, the video, the visual is amazing. She's burning down. She's basically talking about she grinds from Sunday to Friday. She works really hard. She's saying that she deserves everything that she has. And if you watch the video, it's like, wow. And then you have songs like Don't Hurt Yourself, where she says, you know, you fuck up again, you're going to lose your wife. So I think there are things that have happened, maybe that aren't as bad as we're probably imagining them to be, that have inspired her to write this music. And also, she's a feminist, you know. On the last album, she had a song called Flawless, where she had a Chimamanda, an African speaker talking about, you know, the role, what is feminism, you know?
Okay.
And so I think Beyonce, to answer your question, if it is a marketing thing, it's going off without a hitch because women are definitely getting information for this album.
I don't know. I think that for the first time with her, people feel like they're being marketed too. I think people are a little onto it this time.
Well,
seems a little contrived to me. The surprise album and then the being so, I don't know. It just seems like, I think she has a lot of smart people around her.
Of course.
I think you're giving her more credit for being smart herself. I think that she has a lot of people around her.
Sure.
I'm not saying she's not talented. I'm just not certain that she's going to be
mastermind behind the whole. Yeah.
I don't think she's launching rockets at NASA on the weekends. That's just my guess.
And you know what, Jonathan, your guess is a lot of people share.
I just got called Jonathan.
I was thinking Jonathan.
I had to address that because it just happened on my own show.
Who the fuck is Jonathan? I'm Josh. I was thinking about my manager's name is Jonathan. He just emailed me. I can see where you're coming from. I do think that from the Super Bowl, because she got a lot of flack from, you know, with the whole Black Panther scene, you know, Tomi Lahren from The Blaze let her have it on, you know, saying that she used the world stage to promote hate and racism and police brutality, all these things.
The Blaze. I mean, we're talking about Glenn Beck's company, right?
Yeah.
I mean, please.
I know. But the only thing I don't like about her is how contrived she is when she gives us her work. You know, as we put food in her mouth, we consume, we buy her stuff.
Right.
So make it accessible and make it easy for your audience, your fans, the people that matter, that keep you afloat, to have, you know, HBO was free all weekend for the Lemonade premiere. And it's no, you can't stream it anymore. You can only get it when you download the album.
Right.
So thank God I TiVo'd it or DVR'd it, sorry. But
otherwise you wouldn't have downloaded it?
Absolutely not. I would download the album. I mean, I buy tracks. I'm not going to buy the whole album. I've heard the whole album, but I buy music that I buy the tracks that I like. You know, that's the beauty of iTunes and all these different digital purchases.
I'm the stupid one who buys the whole thing.
It depends. If it's an artist like Mariah Carey, who, as you know, I'm a huge fan of, I'm going to buy the whole album. Ariana Grande. But Beyonce.
The donut liquor.
Hey, watch your mouth. I've licked a couple of donuts. I didn't put them back, but I've licked a couple of donuts.
I eat donuts, but I don't go into Dunkin' and lick them.
But musically, in conclusion, though, Josh,
yes,
Beyonce, good for her. I think the body work is awesome. I think that she, good for her for being able to create, you know, a cohesive body of work that sounds great. It's fun to listen to. It's thought provoking. And who knows? The Formation World Tour kicked off last week in Miami. Mm-hmm. Rave reviews from people. I mean, you watch on YouTube and stuff. So she's obviously doing something right.
Well, and how did you feel about, you know, she just performed in North Carolina and she did not back out of that performance as many artists have done. And she sort of made a statement that was supportive of LGBT causes, but it was kind of a day late and a dollar short.
Yeah.
I mean, she sort of came to that late. How'd you feel about that?
Well, you know, I think
he says as he sips on it.
I know. I think there's a lot of speculation that Beyonce hops on the bandwagon for certain causes when it's convenient for her, right?
Back to our marketing discussion. Yeah, yes.
I want to be brutally honest with you and for your listeners, I haven't thought about that. That's a very good question. I haven't thought about that. But if I had, I think that, yeah, she should be more aware of what's going on in the world outside of her bubble and to know that there is, you know, issue brewing within the LGBT community in that state and to what's canceling one concert. And then there was an article.
And by the way, I'm not saying one way or another whether it's canceling
absolutely.
Or not canceling. Sure. But she hadn't spoken on the issue before she did a show there.
Well, but also.
So that seems a little self-serving to come out with a comment when you're already in the city. Weeks after this stuff's going on.
Well, I think I read an article, though, Josh, that the show got canceled because of something electrical happened at the stadium that they couldn't at North Carolina. It was on Yahoo or Manchester. I think I was reading that this morning. So who knows? But nonetheless,
we know she didn't cancel
for the right reason.
Okay. So another thing that I find fascinating is I feel like all these Broadway actresses, I don't know if you follow theater at all.
I saw Kinky Boots in New York. It was amazing.
It's great, right?
So good.
Okay, so all of these actresses, people are bringing cell phones into the theaters. They're texting. Things are happening. And
I can't hear you, Josh. I'm trying to turn me up.
I don't know.
There you go. Okay, perfect. Okay. That's better.
So all of these Broadway actresses, like there'll be somebody who comes into the theater with a cell phone. Like Patti LuPone is notorious for it, where she'd stop a show and chastise an audience member for having a cell phone.
Sure.
She took somebody's cell phone at another performance. Well, the latest one is an actress named Laura Benanti, who's very well known in New York. And she stopped a matinee performance of a show called She Loves Me, which she's starring in with Jane Krakowski right now, because a cell phone rang during it. So she stopped the show and she basically said, we'll wait.
Yeah.
Now, she got press because she stopped the show and did that. Like, Playbill.com wrote about it. It sort of hit the internet. And I always think to myself, like, really? It's almost more of a press thing to me. I don't know that that's what she was thinking. But to stop a show to make a statement, I mean, people know they're not supposed to have their phones in the theater.
Totally.
And there are ushers standing all over the place. So why don't we let them
take care of the phones and take care of that
and not stop a show? You're supposed to act like there's no cell phone going off,
right,
is my opinion. And then she tweeted and she basically said that she had to say something because it was during her quietest, most vulnerable moment of the show. So if it had happened in a more upbeat part of the show, she'd have been fine with it. What the fuck is that?
I feel like, exactly, what the fuck is that is a great question, Josh.
Bitch, please.
It's like, if you're, the show must go on. You know, as a performer myself,
right,
you know, if I have a wig and I'm performing, my wig falls off, I keep it moving. You know, if
how often do you have a wig?
This month, because DragCon is in May. May is National Wear a Wig every fucking Friday month.
All right. So,
but I think that's a little bit over the top. I mean,
I agree. I don't think people should have phones out in the theater.
Absolutely.
And they shouldn't be texting and they shouldn't be tweeting. You know, in a movie theater, the actors don't have the luxury. Angelina Jolie doesn't walk around and say, please stop texting.
Yeah.
In the theater, it's a different experience. I get that. And I understand that it's rude to the performers, but they need to be able to focus and keep performing and let people who are policing the audience police the audience.
And if honestly, Josh, yes, policing the audience, absolutely. And honestly, Josh, if she's that involved in her performance as she should be and that connected.
Her quietest, most vulnerable moment.
Tony, that's going to get her to Tony.
Yeah.
Then a phone ringing is nothing.
Right. Meanwhile, she gets press and Playbill. She can bite my ass. Okay, so now, speaking of Broadway, we need to go to Jennifer Hudson for a minute.
J-Hud?
So Jennifer Hudson is what I call bitter on Twitter.
have we hashtagged that yet, John?
Bitter on Twitter. Because, okay, so The Color Purple scored Tony nominations, but J-Hud did not.
Oh.
Okay, for her performance. So on the Tony's website, they list the shows that have been nominated.
Right.
And the synopsis of the show starts with Jennifer Hudson makes her Broadway debut in. So somebody tweeted and said they couldn't believe that the description of the show on the Tony's website mentioned her when she didn't even get a nomination.
Right.
So Jennifer Hudson tweeted and said, my presence was used for my celebrity, not my talent. I'm not surprised.
Well, didn't Brandy and Fantasia?
This is a revival of The Color Purple.
I know, but what I'm saying,
Fantasia was in the Fantasia was in the original version.
Got it.
But I mean, my celebrity was used. First of all, let's talk celebrity. Okay, so she has an Oscar
for Dreamgirls, which
That was really, she should have had a Grammy. She won an award for singing because we know the girl can't really act.
Right.
Okay. I worked on Sex and the City, the movie. I saw scenes that did not appear, and I saw other takes, and let me just say.
Well, I mean, J-Hud's talented. I mean, she definitely, look.
You could work for the UN.
Hey,
you're very diplomatic.
Jennifer Hudson.
She's a great singer. She's not an actress.
But she was looking damn good in the Weight Watchers commercials. Even I was like, I'm going to go straight for Jennifer Hudson. She was hot.
But she is not a good actress.
No, you're right. You're right. So.
She has an Oscar. The girl has an Oscar.
I bet Beyonce was pissed about that.
I mean, but to say my presence was used for my celebrity, not my talent, and I'm not surprised. First of all, to be so vocal and say I'm not surprised as though her experience on the show has not been good. You know, who says that publicly?
And also to say that she's basically saying, like, I'm talented, you know. They're overlooking my talent.
Right. She was used for her celebrity, never mind the fact that maybe she just wasn't good enough to get a Tony nomination.
Right.
That's not an option.
That leads us to wondering, are most stars delusional?
Are you really asking that?
Well, yeah, because
I don't think anybody would be surprised. I mean, yes, but I just think it's funny that the idea that maybe she didn't deserve it is not at issue.
Right.
It's simply that she was being used for her celebrity.
I will say that her scenes in Empire were some of the best of the show. And since we're talking about Jennifer Hudson and her acting ability, were some of the
best.
You
mean when she played like a preacher?
The preacher, yeah.
That was a bizarre...
No, she wasn't a preacher. She was the MFT. She was his therapist.
Okay, and... whatever. Who got a little too touchy-feely and a little too... Like, that was a bizarre thing. There's that one scene where he's in the... There's one... Sorry, people who don't watch Empire. I mean, I stopped after season one because I just can't anymore. It got so bad. But there's that one scene where she goes over to him. You almost think that...
They're going to do it.
That something sexual is going to happen. And then, of course, it doesn't.
But she starts singing.
What the fuck is a music therapist?
Well, because they
needed
bipolar.
An excuse. Okay. I'm just saying that rhetorically.
Yeah.
They needed an excuse to have her sing.
Dude.
So she's a music therapist.
That's any guest star that's on there. There's so many people on that show that are like, why are you on this show? Like, really?
Empire. I can't. Okay. So now one little political thing.
Sure.
So, in an interview with Howard Stern, Anderson Cooper said that he likely won't vote in this presidential election. And he says, I don't think reporters should vote. It's a thing, he said. But he's still a citizen, right? So don't you think that he still has the rights and the duties of a citizen? I mean, I understand trying to, you know, be totally impartial in your work.
Right.
But you're still a human being who has the rights of a citizen.
Well, the rights of a citizen. You know, Anderson Cooper, to me, is one of those sexy, sly Fox Adonis gods walking amongst us.
He's very handsome.
Very handsome. And he's smart. And he's and as a host myself, I love watching him.
I agree.
I think Anderson Cooper, you know.
I don't mean I agree as in a host myself. But I mean, I agree as in I enjoy watching
him. He's fun to watch. And, he, you know, even when he's being intense, he finds a way to temper being serious with humor. And like, he's so good at what he does. He's a consummate professional to me. If he doesn't want to vote, he doesn't want to vote. You know, he probably feels...
But to me, a non-vote is a vote for Trump.
Okay. And maybe...
That's how I see it. Sorry, Susan Sarandon.
Absolutely.
Not Susan Sarandon, Deborah Messing, or whoever is that Twitter war that everybody's all upset about.
Bette Midler. But, you know, probably also because Anderson Cooper has privy to a lot more information than we probably don't. You know, and he sees a lot, probably sees things. He probably is experiencing this whole every presidential election differently than how we view it on television. So for him, he's probably over it, you know, and there could be a myriad of reasons why he wouldn't vote. And yes, he's an American citizen, you know, he has opportunity to do it. But if he chooses not to do it, I say, you know, to each their own. You know, I'm not registered to vote in California. Am I going to hell for that?
Do you hear my silence?
I know. And it's so funny, Josh, because at work, people, they get really fired up about politics, like almost to the point of tears when it comes to talking about politics. Mm-hmm. And I didn't grow up.
I mean, not to say that I don't care. Obviously, I care what goes on in our country.
Absolutely. Sure.
I know that I have a certain way of thinking. I don't believe that I'm going to change people's minds by talking about it. We all think what we think. Mm-hmm. So I go about I go about doing what I need to do as a citizen, and I vote, and I vote the way my mind and my heart tells me to vote, but I don't go around and sort of try to convince people to follow along.
It's like all my vegan friends, you know, that lose
their
mind.
Don't get me started on the vegans.
But like, you know, I appreciate, Josh, passion. I appreciate commitment, you know, and taking a strong stance on things. But when it comes to a point of almost abusive or it's condescending in the tone they use to talk to you about certain things because you don't feel or agree, I don't have time for that. Like, I have a friend who's all about feel the
burn.
Yeah,
but it's because it's like they're angry because they had to eat cashew cheese and they couldn't actually have real pizza.
Right, and I have a friend
I'd be upset too.
But at the end of the day, though, you can't...
I'd be angry if I was drinking Silk.
Silk is great. Silk is very good, actually. But...
Seitan Parmesan.
At the end of the day, Josh, you can't fix a country that's more than 200 years old in 8 years. You know, like
speak for yourself.
There's so many things that
don't
need to
underestimate
that.
Me.
Oh, you, yes. Cause you know, you and Oprah are like on the same, like you're
well,
like the
Oprah
Jewish
and I
Oprah.
Have a lot in common.
What?
We both love bread.
I love bread. Okay. The joy is I can eat bread all day. It's like bread.
Okay, you have such a good... Yeah, that's such a great impersonation. Can you do
Here's
it again?
The thing. Here's the thing. What's the thing, Oprah? I love bread. You're like, girl, go get yourself some like focaccia. Look, they have unlimited bread and salad at freaking Olive Garden. Have at it. Buy an Olive Garden, Oprah. Do it. Have at it, girl.
I always wanted to have like... I want to have like a dogs named Oprah and Gail.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine being like,
Oprah, stop licking Gail.
Oprah, don't sniff Gail's ass.
I'm going to take Oprah out. I'll be like, Oprah, get off the bed. You're talking to somebody on the phone. You're like, I've got to go. I got to take Oprah.
No, Oprah just shit on the floor.
Anyway, all right. Well, enough of everybody else's nonsense. So tell me, how did you wind up on RuPaul's Drag Race? I know you joined in season 3. So was there a casting call? Like, how did this happen?
You know, it's so funny. I'd say in the last 5 years, I've been really big about the universe and, you know, things coming to fruition. And
right. I don't believe in any of that, so let's just skip over it.
Okay, cool. So I was teaching a dance class at Goldschirm Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. And I was too.
What was it? Zumba, right? Every time I walk into a Zumba class after Zumba, it smells
like we're separated at birth.
Right. Except I'm not Jewish. I didn't have a bris. I have things cut off and buried in the backyard.
So that brings me to that question. Do you prefer circumcised or uncircumcised men?
It doesn't matter as long as it's pretty.
All right.
And doesn't smell funny.
All right.
But I was teaching a class, and a friend of the producer took my class. Mm-hmm. And she said, hey, my friend's looking for models for a show. I think he'd be great. Here's his information. She gave it to me. And so I reached out. And someone at the production company, this was in February of 2010, mm-hmm. emailed me. And I was like, whatever. Because I had, believe it or not, audience, I had no clue. I mean, I heard about RuPaul's Drag Race, but I never watched it because it premiered in 2009 when it premiered.
Right.
So
And it sort of became, I mean, it didn't right out of the gate.
Right.
I mean, I think it did better than everybody thought, but I think it's sort of become more of a cultural phenomenon.
Right. And season 2 with Raven and Morgan, right. That's when it became the conscious, like what's this show on Logo? You know, that.
Right.
So. And then for about a good 3 months, it was back and forth with the production company. And then finally, someone at the production company said, hey, you know, it was a Wednesday. You need to come in and audition. Send me a picture of you. And luckily, in January, I'd taken, you know, these newer shots. So I sent them a picture, called me in, and I went. And they were like, we need you to dance like a go-go boy. And I was like, I'm a professional dancer. I don't dance like a go-go boy. It was just stupid. And you know, the basement at World of Wonder, they have like a...
Where the green screen is.
Yeah, the green screen is. Yeah. So, and I did, and then I didn't hear anything for about 2 months, and then all of a sudden
like,
I get a...
That sounds like such a casting couch
moment. Totally, and that's what I thought.
We're going to need you to take your clothes off.
That's what I thought.
And dance.
Yeah, it was very, you know, but I was...
I hold similar auditions.
I know. Why do you think I'm here now? And so I didn't hear anything for a couple months, and then I get a call like... random, like, hey, are you available for the show called RuPaul's Drag Race? You're going to be pick a member, blah, 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 and the rest is history. And it's so funny because when I, from being on the show for as many seasons as I have and, you know, being with Ru and finding out, you know, you always hear backstories about how things come about. Mm-hmm. And it's just really cool how it happened, you know? And I never in a million years thought to be on an iconic, because Drag Race is iconic. Global, right. I mean, it's an iconic.
You're right, it is worldwide. I mean, people global. All over are...
Yeah, I get tweets from Antarctica. Yeah. I get tweets from like Brazil, Iceland. So that's how I got on the show. And then, you know, they've had me back.
So what's the set like? I imagine it's a fun environment to be in.
Well, it's a competition show. So, right. You know, World of Wonder and Logo, they're very, you know, strict on, you know, the integrity of the show. Because, right. You know, there's a winner, you know, things have to run a certain way, but drag.
I love that you just tried to give a lot of gravity to it.
Well,
it's like, you know, it is a competition.
It is a competition show, and people.
I'm just gonna go along with it,
Josh. Well, when you know WeHo Confidential, when people start posting like pictures, like so and so's off social media. Ooh, they must be on season whatever. It's intense. You know, people like think they know where they film it. But I liken the set of Drag Race to a bag of Skittles. You never know what flavor is going to happen on any given day. You know, it's lots of fun. It's very cold on set.
Cold temperature wise?
Yes.
Or cold in terms of the
environment? No, yeah. Everyone's super friendly and they have awesome craft service. But
isn't that the best?
Yeah. I mean, like I could stock my pantry with junk for at least a good 3 months, but everyone's really cool. It's lots of fun.
I love craft service.
Me too.
It's the best thing on any set ever.
Yeah. Me and Red Vines, intimate relationship.
It's fine. So for listeners who aren't familiar with this show, can you explain to everybody sort of the function of the pit crew? Because you guys don't really talk that much in the show. You're sort of there as accessories in
we're ornamental.
Yes.
We're ornamental.
Can you sort of explain how
not
that
not functional.
Works?
Yeah. Well, basically, we just help with the challenges. We help, you know, Rue with the challenges. We participate in if there's a challenge where they need a prop or human props. And what people don't know about the pit crew, and I'm going to say this, and I always say this, that we're actually talented individuals. Like, we're not just bodies. And, you know, a lot of people, when I travel around the country and I talk to people, they think, I went to Houston and this guy had said something. It's like, well, you're in your underwear on TV. I mean, you can't be that smart. And I'm like, okay. I mean, and I understand that, you know, that's the perception, but that's, you know, we have to be able to dance, we have to be able to act, you know, we have to be able to sing. Like, there's a lot of things that we have to be able to do in order that if, let's say, the production company World of Wonder says, hey guys, when you do this, can you make that happen and do it in a short period of time and make sure it's amazing? Because, you know, everything they put out is amazing. So it's on the show, we're ornamental. We help out with challenges. We do whatever we can. And then pretty much that's it.
So, of the current pit crew members, am I correct that only Bryce, the redhead, is straight,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So how do you think the experience is different for him? Because I imagine with all of that sort of
right.
gay energy.
There's a lot of gay energy on
apparently he did not want to join us today. But we'll give him shit for that at DragCon.
Shade.
Yeah.
Bryce is great. You know, I will say this, that our audience, our Drag Race pit crew audience, always wants to, a couple episodes ago, there was a top bunk, bottom bunk challenge with Andrew Christian. And so people really took that literal. So apparently I'm this raging bottom. And they're always trying to make Bryce gay. Bryce is very straight. Bryce is definitely, I don't use the words gay friendly because that's stupid. Bryce right. is a cool guy.
Right, right.
He's secure with he's Bryce. Like, a man to me, if you have an issue being around gay male, or you feel like that threatens your masculinity or sexuality, then you need to look within yourself and figure out why that's happening. Because my older brother is a hyper masculine army sergeant. He told me about Drag Race and was like, this shit's off the hook. And so.
And did he actually say this shit's off the
yes,
hook? Is that how it's
quote,
explained?
End
to you?
Quote. And so, okay. You know.
Sure, that went over big in the barracks.
Well, I mean, but.
He's like, girl, this shit is off the hook.
He's like, hunty. No, but Bryce is definitely cool. Bryce is fun. Bryce is, he's super smart. He's an aerospace engineer. So it's not like he just is some vapid. And that's
so he actually is a rocket scientist.
Absolutely. And he's legitimately like about his job. But a lot of people think that because they see Andrew Christian models out there that are, I don't know, doing less than desirable things, that's what we do. And if they do their homework and if they use a search engine called Google.
Let's define less than desirable.
Less than desirable.
Because I have a feeling you and I might see that differently.
Well, here's the thing. You'll never catch me dancing on a box. And I have no problem with go-go dancers. I just don't do that. And people ask me to do that and I don't do that because I am, in addition to being on the pit crew, I'm also an on-camera personality. I'm a host. So I'm, you know, I do other things in industry that matter to me. I don't, people can live their life however they want. Do what you need to do to get the job done, to make your money. That's cool. Who am I to judge? But when people come at you with this misconception that
who are you not to?
Well, that's shade again. But when people want to pigeonhole you or automatically label you as this and that, it's like, pump the brakes. Again, do your homework, Google a motherfucker, and you'll see that we are more than just bodies and pretty faces. Even if that, because sometimes I feel like a total fatty. You know what I mean?
I'm not even going to pay attention to that comment. So do you ever feel, so does everyone in the pit crew get along?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're, you know, it started off with me and Sean, and then we brought on in season six, we brought on Miles and Simon, and then they retooled and brought on me and Miles and Simon.
Yeah, retooled. A good choice of words.
They retooled with our tools. We all get along. I mean, it's a job. We're professional. It's fun.
I mean, you know how many sets I've been on that it's a job and people don't get along?
Well, because that's divas
and egos.
I feel
like you're being very, very PC.
I mean, look, if there's any tea to spill, trust me, it would be spilled. But, you know, we just do our job and that's it. And it's fun.
Are you guys friends off camera?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. We definitely hang out. We travel together. And, you know, it's such a blessing to be able to go and do a show like that and to have the opportunity to be around someone like RuPaul and to be able to experience that. You know, like I'm so thankful all the time that I get to until Drag Race, I really didn't have a lot of experience with drag queens. And now it's so impressive to me, Josh, that the talent it takes to assume another responsibility, to create this other persona, to be that flawless, to be able to deliver and perform and just really, really be a different person. You know, like, not everyone can do that flawlessly, and these people do. So I have a lot of respect for drag queens and what they go through, because, and it, I feel like people look at drag outside of our bubble of Los Angeles as like men playing dress up, which it is.
Right.
But it's also a $1 million industry.
Right. And it's an art. I mean, absolutely, it is an art form.
For sure. So it's just fun. It's fun.
So do you ever feel objectified? Because you guys don't really say much on the show. So I know it's probably flattering to be drooled over because of your looks and your body. But is there a sense for you ever where you feel like, I'm kind of a piece of meat here?
You know, Josh, that's a great question. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it's more so, it becomes a mental mind fuck. And here's why. Because we're known, as you know, the gay community is very, we're brutal. We want equality. We want, you know, to be together and love each other. But we're the first to tear each other down. We're the first to be like, oh, he's fat, or he doesn't have a six pack, or I don't date Asians, or no black dudes, right, or all these things. And so when you're on a show and you're known for your body, you have to keep that up. You know, you have these, I don't know, these hangups now about like how you look. And so it's exhausting after a while. Or, you know, people don't, on your Instagram, all they want to see you is you in your underwear. Or they'll say things in blogs like, oh, he's gained a couple of pounds, or he has dad bod, or all these things. So, you know, it becomes a job. And sometimes it's a job that you're like, ugh, I don't want to go to the gym today. Or why do I have to always, you know, go out to West Hollywood and look my best? You know, I mean, naturally, I like to take care of myself. Mm-hmm. But there's times where I don't want to be done up to the nines or have to worry about, you know, how I look. I just want to chill and be a normal human being. And granted, you know, when you're in the industry, that's the choice you make. And, you know, in our industry, perception's reality, and people, what they see at face value is what they think is reality, right? Mm-hmm. So it becomes a lot of work. And as far as being objectified, I think one of the people who objectifies me the most is my husband, which I don't mind because he loves me. But you want people to also know that you have something to say, and you have a brain, and you have a personality, and you are just as sexy and a turtleneck and some gross jeans as you are and some Andrew Christians and butt ass naked with oil, you know? And I think that I'm constantly always putting that out there for people, mm-hmm, to know that, you know?
Which is good. I mean, people need to feel better about themselves, I sure think. So what do you do to stay in such great shape? Basically from diet to exercise, like how do you keep that body?
You know, luckily genetics plays a big part, you know, black don't crack. I was a dancer from the time out, from 7 till now. I still dance a lot now. So just, you know.
But what sort of, why did you stop?
I stopped dancing because I had 2 back surgeries. Okay. I had 2 microlumbar dissectomies on my L5-S1 at 27 and again at 32.
And I'm going to pretend like I totally understand what
it's
you just said.
It's your vertebrae. It's in the sacral of
I'm
your
just going to, as our a friend of mutual friend of ours said, I'm just going to repeat and agree. So you've had 2 back surgeries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was just a lot of wear and tear on my body. And also, Josh, I'm a firm believer in going by feeling and doing what feels good to you, and dance just didn't feel good anymore. I came to LA to be a dancer. I moved out here in 2001. Horrible experience. Came back in 2005 and been here ever since. And, you know, danced with Eminem, Gaga. So I just didn't like, I didn't love it anymore. It wasn't fun. And to me, I come from, my parents are divorced. Mm-hmm. So I come from a home where it's you grind, you make it happen. You go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. And when you have that kind of lifestyle, you dead a lot of emotion in regards to like what you're feeling, and you're like this energizer bunny. So that's why I stopped dancing. But as far as keeping in shape, diet, I'm the firm believer in the intermittent fast.
Mm-hmm. Which is so convenient.
So convenient. And just work out, consistency, cardio, and just lift weights, you know.
So did you have any trepidation about appearing in just your underwear on TV?
No.
Like, did you? No.
Not at all.
Not at all. And your family, like, they're good. They're like, great. Like,
yeah. My aunt, my dad, my parents are super divorced. So my dad.
Not just divorced.
Super divorced. Yeah.
Their divorce wears a cape.
Yeah, no, it's for real. Yeah, mutant status, like Magneto. Magneto divorce.
Super divorced.
Yeah, no, I had no hangups about appearing in Wonder on TV. And they're cool. I mean, they love Drag Race. They know I'm not doing anything that's suggestive. I'm not.
Right.
Yeah, it's fun.
But like, still, it's funny that people have, you know, a perception of
course.
You know. So I was just curious. Yeah. Now, I read somewhere that you have a twin brother.
I do.
So are you identical twins?
We're fraternal.
Okay.
His name is Brandon.
Okay. I always Brandon's a hot name.
He's
right?
Super private though. Like no social media.
But good for him.
Yeah. He's very, very private. He's a nurse. He lives in Albuquerque. Okay. Because that's from New Mexico originally.
But I always have to laugh like twins. This is terrible to say, but of course I'll say it. I always laugh because typically when you meet twins, like why doesn't Cindy Crawford have a twin or David Beckham have a twin?
Sure. David Beckham, no.
But you know what I'm saying?
Right. Like it's really like, hot people.
We usually get two of people that we don't need two of.
Well, Mary Kay and Ashley Olsen, they're
But they're not
cute.
Identical twins.
They're not?
No.
Shut up. Lies.
Well, and can't you tell Mary Kate's the better actress?
No.
I'm just kidding.
I'm like, no, I can't tell. They look like alien bubble. I'm
like Mary Kate, like there's one that's a better actress.
Really?
Please. But they're worth a gazillion dollars. They should live and be well.
Yeah.
Okay, so in your opinion, first of all, I wanted to go back to the Drag Race for just a minute. Have any of the queens ever hit on you? And if you were single, would any of them ever interest you romantically?
I've been hit on by a couple of queens for sure. But, you know, here's the thing, though. You become friends with the queens too, certain ones, because, you know, you just become friends with them. Like, I'm cool with Manila, love Manila. Shangela, I love Shangela, really good friend of mine. None of them ever, they know my role on the show, that I'm just a piece of meat. So they keep it at that. But if I was single and wasn't with my beautiful hubby, who I love and adore, and
I feel like this is a PSA, not a PSA.
Wait,
I feel
disclaimer?
Like this is like a, this whole thing is just a, who I love and adore very much. Like that you got in trouble for something and like you're going to have to let him hear this podcast.
No, I think Milk is cute as a guy. I think Milk is very cute as a guy. Courtney Act is good looking.
As a man?
As a man.
Okay, I have met her as a woman.
Yeah.
But not as a man.
Cute as a guy. Who else is, I mean, they're... Yeah.
Could you date somebody, knowing their personalities, could you date somebody?
That does drag?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. Because I think that coming from an artsy background myself, I know that that's just a personality they assume. And that's not who they are. And I think there's a kind of a sexiness in the duality in the personality. Like, let's say you're dating like this really hot guy who becomes this really sexy drag queen. You know, it takes a lot of courage to do drag one. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's kind of hot as well, that they're like able to go out there and just be like, fuck it. This is what I do. You know, I go off personality. I don't like bitchiness. So if you're a bitch, then no, we're not going to vibe well because I just don't like that in anybody. So yeah,
right, regardless of what you
do. If what you do or if you do drag or not.
What makes a great drag queen in your opinion?
I'm glad you asked that question. Take notes, people. Just kidding.
Yes. These are Jason's notes on how to be a great drag queen.
How to be a great drag queen 101. Mm-hmm. Okay, first of all, if you're going to lip sync a song, know your words. Biggest pet peeve is when I go to other cities and drag queens don't know your fucking words. How do you not know the words to Love on Top from Beyonce and you claim you're a Beyonce impersonator? Really? Stop the madness.
I love how fiercely loyal you are to Beyonce and Mariah.
I'm Mariah, absolutely. Absolutely. Don't say anything about Mariah. I'm a lamb for life. But just rules of being a great drag queen, Josh, are this. You make sure your aesthetic is on point. Your makeup, hair, flawless. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a Libra. I'm September perfectionist. So make sure just whatever you do, you let them have it, slay. I don't care if it's comedy drag, if it's pageant drag, if it's camp drag, if it's beauty. Just be good. Be good. Be entertaining. You know, be entertaining and commit to what you're doing. Don't half-ass it. A lot of these, I see so many drag queens that want to go and be awesome, but they're not really putting the due diligence and the time needed to be awesome. Like as a host, I train as a host. I go to classes. I work with people because I want to be the best self I can. I want them to be like, wow, Jason Carter is fucking fantastic. Same thing with drag or any medium you're interested in. If you want to shovel shit, be the best damn shoveler you can. So just be on top of your look. Be on top of your brand as a drag queen. Because look at Shangela. eliminated from both seasons. Probably one of the most successful drag queens out now because she figured it out. She figured out that my brand has to be that tight, that has to be that much on point for people to want to work with me. Mm-hmm. And that's and drag, like I said, drag is an industry now. Buyers of talent are buying drag queens now. You have the potential to make a lot of money being a drag queen, whereas before Drag Race, mid-2000s and beyond, it wasn't as in demand as it is now. So if you really want to do this or you are doing this, up your game. If you feel like you haven't evolved, Joan Rivers, and I'll get to where I'm going with this. Joan Rivers, you know, says she has to reinvent herself. She reinvented herself every 3 years because she was like, you know, if I don't have a booking, the last thing I booked is in April and it's already June, something's a problem.
Right.
So you got to reinvent yourself. Same thing with drag queens, reinvent yourself. And just make sure that you're staying ahead of the curve, ahead of the trend, and be awesome. Be awesome.
I mean, that everybody should just be awesome.
Boom.
So behind the scenes, is there any dish you can share with us, like any wig fights, panty pulling, anything that you can...
Yeah. Me and Miles play swords. Just kidding, no, we don't. People always ask, do you guys play swords? No, there. You know, there's really... Where the pit crew were sequestered, we're actually... We get ushered on set, removed from set. So there's really no...
So you don't really interact with anyone?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
There's no... That we don't fraternize with the queens. And again, cause it's a competition show. The integrity of the show is what is all that matters. So there's no tea, you know, there's no like backstage drama or anything. Not since I've been there, and I've been there a while. So no.
Okay. So now tell me about some of your other, you've mentioned your hosting and broadcast work other mm-hmm. than RuPaul's Drag yeah. Race. So tell me a little bit about that and some of what you.
What I do.
Some of the other things that you're doing what you do.
What do I do?
Well, tell us what you do, starting with when you wake up in the morning.
I get up, fart. Just kidding. I do a lot of online is where digital's going nowadays. No one's really watching TV anymore. So I do a lot of online shows for networks like AfterBuzz, The Stream. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm right now, I really can't talk about this, but I'm up for a really good opportunity to be a fashion correspondent. So hopefully that'll work out. I've gone back home and anchored the news, done, you know, a lot of lifestyle shows. I was a radio jockey for 10 years on 4 different formats, Top 40, CHR Rhythmic, Urban, Talk Radio.
So you work a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I stay pretty busy. Drag Race is just another jewel in my bag of jewels.
As it were. So obviously you're charming and, you know, more than just being handsome.
He's a bitch.
So how would you describe your personality to people?
If someone said, who is Jason Carter?
Who is Jason Carter?
Glad you asked, Josh.
Good. Where did that come? It just popped into my head.
God, is that you? My personality is I'm always the life of the party.
Okay.
I'd rather give than receive. Sexually. Just kidding. No. I'd rather give
that in bed and in real life.
I'd rather give than receive. I'm lot energy, friendly, fun. I'm tons of fun. I'm fun. I also tell people, like, listen, when I leave the party, it's a wrap because I'm fun.
That party's over.
It's over.
Yeah, but see, we haven't been at the same parties up until now.
Well, we're going to change that, Josh.
So you're going to have to up your game.
Okay.
It won't be a problem for you because I'm usually in bed by 9.
Dude, shit, me too. What are you talking about? I'm sensitive.
I love when people say, do you want to, I thought we'd do something like, how about we meet at 10? I'm like, meet at 10?
President.
I've finished dinner, seen a movie, and I'm already tucked in with People magazine.
Yo, by 10, 2 sleeping pills, out.
I mean, what is with people?
I know.
Now, I read somewhere that you came out later in life. I think it was around 27.
I did.
I didn't come out till I was 31.
Last year?
Exactly.
Well, congratulations, Josh.
Just how's it feel? My hair off.
How was it for you?
So I'm just curious for you.
Yeah.
As to why you waited that long.
Well,
I mean, I obviously had my own story, which you can read in Porn Again, a memoir available now wherever books are sold.
Barnes and
Not that I'm plugging anything.
I dated my first guy, I'll never forget, summer of 2001. And it was, you always know you're gay, you know, growing up, you know, the high school.
But some people say, I mean, I knew when I was in kindergarten.
Sure.
Some people say that they didn't figure it out till it, you know, I don't know. I knew. I mean, you don't really know because you're not sexualized. So you don't really know what it is, but there's the sort of fiber of awareness that goes through you.
Absolutely.
That's how I describe it.
You know, you hit the nail on the head. Absolutely. Josh, you're very right. And I dated this guy. It's a really bad relationship. Because back home.
This is before you came out.
Before I came out. Back home, I hosted a TV show in Albuquerque, and then I was on the radio, so I really couldn't be out.
Were you out to your family?
No, I was not. So I was living this double life. So in 2001, the LGBT presence was nowhere near as accepting as is 15 years later.
Right.
Nowhere near. And at 21 years old, because I'm 36 now, 21 years old, it was like, you know, so I had this bad relationship.
I just realized that I just asked you if you had, you had already told me how old you were when I said that you were 27 when you came out. And then you were talking about in 2000. I don't know. Anyway, I could have done the math there, but I don't do math. Sorry.
Neither do I. Hate math. And so I had bad relationships. So I was, you know, was abusive, all these things. So one day I just had enough. Like I had came back from LA. I was in this relationship long distance, you know, a lot of things transpired that were really just too much to handle. And it was all because I was living this double life. And so one day it just happened. I was went to my mom's house. It was a Sunday. And I was like, just really upset about something. And she was like, what's wrong? And I was like, Ma, this is what's going on. And I just told her. And she was like, I know. She's like, I've known. She's like, I've always known. And it wasn't about the gay thing. She knew something was wrong. And she put two and two together. And then she knew I was in this bad relationship. But she kept asking me questions. And my mom, your mother knows when there's something up with her kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm so...
Well, I particularly think mothers and sons have a
absolutely,
special thing.
Totally. And I was so secretive, and normally I'm really open about things. So we talked about it, and now it was never an issue. When I came out to my dad, that was a whole different story. But my mom, it was never an issue. It was like, okay, cool, let's grab lunch, keep moving. It was nothing.
So your father, do you still have a relationship?
Absolutely,
with him?
Yeah.
And he's okay with it now, or you just don't discuss it, or how?
He was never not okay with it. What happened was I came out to my father when I was 33. Mm-hmm. I was going to New Orleans to visit him, and he was like, hey, are you going to bring your partner with you? I almost crashed on the 101. I was like, what do you mean partner? What are you talking about? And he was like, Jay, come on. Facebook, social media, I know. What's his name? Muffin? Munchkin? That's his nickname. And so, but my family's, my twin brother, everyone's very supportive. It's not even an issue because my mom, family's family.
Now, how old were you when you first experimented with men sexually?
21.
Oh, so that was it. And what, had you ever been with a woman before?
Oh, I was Captain Sausage in high school for sure.
Really?
I have been with lots of girls.
Wow,
lots of girls.
I love how you're like lots and lots.
I'm
still
friends with what my some girls are still like, damn. Like you're letting all that go to waste. So I'm like, well, you know, it just wasn't, you know, sorry.
So. Am I correct? So let's talk about Munchkin for a minute.
Sure.
Who, by the way, is an amazing, wonderful guy. I'm going to say it for you so you don't have to say it again.
He's a wonderful husband, dad.
So you've been with him for more than 6 years.
Yes.
And his name is also Jason.
Jason, yeah.
So are you guys actually married?
We're domestic partners.
Okay. So and he has two children.
Yes.
So you're a parent.
I am. I'm stepmom, yeah, for sure.
Does having the same name, does that whole thing ever get confusing?
Mm-hmm. Not at all. I call him Munchkin. Because he's shorter than me. I'm 6'3". He's 5'9".
Okay, so everyone's shorter than you.
Everyone's a midget. Okay. A small person. I'm sorry. No,
you can be on PC here.
Okay. He's perfect. He is like everything I never knew I wanted in a person. He's 10 years older than me, so he has different... Like, he's a father, so his thought process on a lot of things is in parent mode. And even with me sometimes, he tries to be my dad, mm-hmm. which, I don't mind. But, he's just so awesome. Like, he's fun and he lets me love him, and he's got really cute ears and cute cheeks, and he's just perfect. And I people always say there's no one that's perfect, but to me, even in all his flaws, and he does have some flaws, but they're not flaws to me. They're just
because
like,
I think that's when you know you're in love with somebody is when their flaws become endearments.
Yeah. He's a backseat driver. He's always right. He's an attorney. So he has this always right complex. He thinks he knows everything, and it's like, okay, you know, he's a little hot-headed sometimes, and I think that's why we're so good for each other, because I give to him what he needs and he gives me what I need. And so I'm patient. I'm more accepting of, I tolerate a lot of things, and not tolerate, meaning like he's so bad, but I'm able to smooth things out when the waters are rough with him and he's upset about things or he's stressed out, because you know that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be there,
right?
And so, but yeah, I mean, 6-7 years going strong, couldn't be happier.
Now, what is his comfort level with your being the object of desire for so many other men?
You know, he actually loves it. He thinks it's a compliment to him because he has the prize. Like I'm his property, but I'm committed to him. Like he's got this, you know? And so, I mean, obviously he's more popular than me. He's got like 35,000 followers on Instagram where I'm barely.
I don't know why I'd ever want to follow an attorney.
He's really cute though.
But what kinds of pictures is he posting?
He's got to go on his Instagram and see.
It's like my sister said to me before my book came out, I did not let my sister's an attorney as well. Yeah. And she's very risk averse for that reason.
Of course.
So I did not let her see the manuscript for the book. I figured she'll have to see it when the book actually is on the shelf in the store, because I didn't want her risk-averse mentality to affect what I was doing with the book.
Sure.
The lawyers had gone through the book. It wasn't her problem to deal with. And she said to me, I remember we were walking in New York one day, and she said, I would never do something like this. I would never write a book like that that's so revealing. And I said, well, that's great, because no one would want to read your book.
Boom.
It was like, you're a lawyer. You're an intellectual property lawyer in Manhattan. Please save everyone from having to read that crazy, outrageous memoir. Have you been able to use your visibility on Drag Race to sort of speak on LGBT issues and sort of use that as a platform?
Absolutely.
Like, I imagine it gives you a great opportunity to do that.
For sure. And, you know, I think, Josh, some of the best times to do that is when people reach out to you on social media. Like a couple months ago, I had a kid who was depressed. Like, you know, I was clinically depressed, so I know what that's like.
Right.
And he was like, what should I do? You know, and I was like, well, you should seek help. If you're going to hurt yourself, call 911, you know, and just, you know, which
is. Does this happen in a public tweet or in private message?
A public tweet.
Okay.
And, you know, people ask me all the time, like, you know, about self-esteem, you know, coming out, wanting to do drag, and they're in the closet. And I try to the best of my ability, be a sense of positivity for them. I think that's most important, because you can go and speak at conferences. You can go and be, you know, a mouthpiece for the LGBT community and do it at, you know, rallies and stuff like that. But there's nothing as powerful as when someone directly, in the dark, I call it, reaches out to you because they genuinely and honestly need your, or looking for guidance. Because I remember, there were so many times in my life, Josh, where I wanted guidance, where I wanted someone to save me. And not save me in a sense of, you know, but when you're scared and you feel alone, you feel like something's wrong with you. You're going to hell. Like all these emotions that, you know, a teenager should not be feeling. You should not. I have a nephew who is so awesome because he's 6 and he's happy. And I think kids should be happy. I think teenagers should be happy. You should go to dances. Those years you will never get back.
Right.
You should be happy. And I wasn't. I was scared and alone and afraid and insecure and no confidence and just the worst. So when you have, when someone reaches out to me that's going through that, I think that matters more than doing a tweet bitching and complaining about equality or all these things that, you know, that matter. Of course they matter, but fall on deaf ears because no one's really listening. So to me, that's what is a blessing to me being on Drag Race and having the platform I have, is to directly impact someone's life versus being, you know, hey, I'm at this rally, but I'm a personality, but am I really truly helping someone?
Right. You know? You are. And you're giving people, I mean, it gives people hope, you know, they see that. Right.
Yeah.
So before I segue into, because we have to answer a sex and or dating question from my Gay Times column. You talk in your blog, which people can find at jasonunleashed.com, along with a lot of other fun things. You talk about going commando fairly regularly.
Yeah.
Are you wearing underwear right now?
Actually, I am wearing underwear right now, only because...
Of course you had to the day that you come to my show.
Well, I didn't know you were going to read my blog.
What the fuck is that?
I know, set up shade. I know you're going to read my blog, but here's the reason why I like going commando.
And I want to know why you decided to wear underwear today.
Okay. I like going commando because I like... it's almost as I would never be inappropriate.
When, right.
You know, that because I feel like some, especially if you go through WeHo, there's a lot of BPL.
Right.
WeHo. But I just like the freedom and like, you know, my asserting my masculinity. Like if I want to swing in the breeze, I can. Like it's, right. You know, it's cool. It's like, you know, it's like a locker room. I don't know. And, you know, I'm not small by any means. So it's just nice to let it just hang there and do its thing. I mean,
that's a lot of information.
Well, also I don't have to do as much laundry, and you know, it's just because I grew up so self-imposed sheltered person, and mm-hmm. I didn't really think I was sexy. And even some days, I don't think I was sexy. I didn't really think I was even cute or had a body until I was like 28. You know what I mean? Like I always felt like because I was a skinny kid, and when you look in the mirror, you always see.
That person, right? You see the young,
right? Or you're.
I think you see yourself at your most insecure.
Absolutely, yeah. And no matter how hard, and you see your body every day. So no matter how hard you work out or how hard you change it, you still always have that. Oh, I was this or I was that, and you never really lose. You know, you don't ever lose that. You know.
So what was behind your decision to wear underwear today? The one day you come here
because I was wearing these jeans and they chafe against my.
All right.
Yeah,
we don't need that happening.
Like, kind of uncomfortable.
Have you seen those Cottonelle ads about going commando?
Yeah.
I mean, how horrible is that? It's like a man and a woman in white pants and they're encouraging you to go commando because Cottonelle is so good that it would leave no skid marks.
Gross.
I mean, honestly.
Totally. Cottonelle's like inappropriate on some of those.
That is the most inappropriate. Those ads are so, they conjure like such a disgusting image to me.
Totally. But here's the thing. It's relatable. Like the Hail the V, the Vagisil commercials.
Oh.
Wars have been fought over it. Like, it's about someone's vagina. Like, is that what we're talking about?
Vagina cream. Okay, so to quickly answer a sex question. So Tyler in Cleveland is in an 8-year relationship with his partner. Recently, his other half proposed the idea of inviting friends into their bedroom for 3 ways to spice up their sex life. Mm-hmm. Tyler wasn't aware that there was a problem with their repertoire or that his husband was at all bored with their physical relationship. But he's open to group sex if that's what his husband needs. He wants to know what our thoughts are on introducing friends into the sex play.
I think, okay, here's the thing with that. Open relationships are a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're...
And I've been in one, all in the book, Porn Again, a memoir, available now wherever books are sold.
Yeah, because like, first of all, people be thirsty.
Right.
And then, you know, and then you have all these other variables that could happen. Like, so what if the other guy is not into you as much as he is into your guy? And then what if, you know, you can't get aroused or there's so many things that come into play. I think that if...
Well, in Gay Times, actually last month, I do talk about 3 ways and sort of the ground rules that you need to have and the 5 or 6 things you need to have in place before you even dip your toe in that water. So to save time, people can go to Gay Times and read that one. But I agree with you. Like, there's so many variables.
That could happen, yeah. Variables galore.
And now, are you and Jason monogamous?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he's asking specifically about friends. I think that's even more dangerous.
Right, because you have a relationship with this person and...
Right, that will forever be changed.
For sure.
In one way or another.
Right, because what happens, let's just say me and you in a relationship.
Right.
I invite my friend over, we get it on, and all of a sudden he's like messaging you behind my back.
Right.
And like, it's just so many things, and also...
So I would say if you're going to do that, it should either be somebody who's sort of anonymous to you and your partner.
In and out, bye.
Or, you know, I hired porn stars for 3 ways.
There you go.
That's what I did. I mean, it was business.
Business, exactly. Because once it's business, there's no emotion attached to it. It's just get out, get off, get out, go home.
Well, and the other thing that concerns me about this for Tyler is that if he's trying to fix a relationship, a sexual relationship, by bringing somebody in, that is not a path to fixing a relationship.
Absolutely not.
And sometimes by somebody in a relationship suggesting a 3-way, it's really just it's basically cheating in broad daylight is what it is.
It's also indicative, I think, of the person, how the person feels, the climate of their sexual situation is, you know, like they feel like one person's bored or not getting it enough. I think that's a conversation that they should have with each other and be like, okay, why do you want this? What am I not doing? How can we fix this within ourselves? Now, if it's because they both are like, we want to bring somebody in.
They want the variety.
Right. If they're both in accordance, then yeah. But if it's like one person that's like, I want a 3-way because I think this, and one person's not in accordance with it, then that you guys need to revisit your relationship and figure out why are you guys on the same page and what can you do with each other to get back on the same page.
There. Right. I totally agree. So, Jason, this is like the fastest hour. Thank you so much, Jason Carter from RuPaul's Drag Race Pit Crew, among many other projects. You can find him on Facebook at Jason J. Carter, Twitter at JJC Forever. That's so
I know.
Lightning. JJC Forever.
Grease Lightning, yeah.
And on Instagram at Jason Carter Official.
Yes.
And keep an eye out for the RuPaul's Drag Race finale, which is coming.
It's 2 weeks, yeah.
And you'll be at RuPaul's DragCon.
I will.
And there'll be some new episodes of Porn Again, the podcast, coming up soon. Thanks for joining us.
Josh, thank you for having me. I had a blast. You're awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. The No Holds Barred conversation continues 24/7 on Facebook at Josh Sabara Author and Twitter and Instagram at Josh Sabara. And then buckle your seatbelts for some titillating real talk. Porn Again, a memoir by Josh Sabara, is available now as a trade paperback, ebook, and audiobook.